Hey there, Stay Right fans. I'm back from my political vacation. Now that I'm back, I'm going to be updating a lot of the content for the Stay Right members section. So please go to stayright.weebly.com. That's stayright.weebly.com and sign up for the newsletter. I get new subscriptions every single day. Also, if you want to go over to the Facebook group, we are Stay Right NCC on Facebook, and feel free to join up. I'm going to have a lot of new content in the members only section on the stayright.weebly.com website. And I will be kicking out a new password soon, but I have been on a little political vacation, so I haven't had a chance to do that yet. But go ahead, check me out, subscribe, be sure to comment, be sure to give me your input. Stayright.weebly.com. Don't forget, folks, stay right.
Welcome to Stay Right.
President of the United States of America.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next president of the United States, Donald Trump. Thank you. It's been
to all Republicans and Democrats and independents across this nation, I say it is time for us to come together as one.
We are not united tonight. There is not a liberal America and a conservative America. There is the United States of America.
We're going to make the GOP right again.
And giving it back to you, the people.
Well, hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Stay Right. I'm your host, Doug Kuhn. We finally made it. Show number 63, Republican Demise. Well, I've been on a little bit of a break, folks. I decided I was getting really irritated with a lot of folks online, especially on social media. There's this constant back and forth bickering that's been occurring. Every time Trump does something wrong, he gets cover from his loyalist supporters, which seem to be more and more numerous. And then when he does something correct, the cultist Never Trump people, the cry wolfers, as I call them, seem to find fault in everything that he does. This kind of came to fruition with the attack that occurred in Syria, with the posturing that the United States military put forward in the Sea of China and off the coast of North Korea. And there has been a lot of tension. There's been a lot of debate as to what's going on. The hardcore cultist cry wolfers were basically saying that we are at war with Syria. We are at war with North Korea. Trump is going to bring us into World War III without knowing the facts, without knowing what's actually happening. And sure enough, we are not currently at war with North Korea, other than the fact that we are currently still in a ceasefire from the Korean War. That hasn't changed. But it seems as though, at least for the time being, that North Korea is kind of taking a few steps backwards. Now, there was a missile test that was performed just this last week, apparently unbeknownst to the North Korean government, right? This is supposed to be some, like, basically, that in my opinion, that's BS. I don't buy it for a second that they're trying to find ways of getting around being held accountable by China. And I think that that's kind of one of the biggest things that I put in the plus side on Donald Trump, is that he actually was able to, even though he's been very harsh with his campaign rhetoric towards China, the negative things that he had to say about China, their government, what they do with their monetary policy, and then he backtracked on that. But he was able to sort of negotiate with China in such a way to put economic pressure on North Korea. And I thought that was a fantastic move on the part of Donald Trump and on the part of China. I think that they did a really good service to, peace in that region, to put the pressure on North Korea, to make them to make them feel as though that they need to start playing ball, they need to start cooperating, and they haven't dismantled their nuclear program, they haven't dismantled their ICBM, their intercontinental ballistic missile program, but at least it has given them some pause. And perhaps this might lead to some sort of a negotiation where we can fix some of these problems. again, so we're not currently at war, or we haven't gone to a new phase of war with North Korea, but this was this sort of this rallying cry, I guess, to get the cultist Never Trump Cry Wolf people on board. And as I've said 1,000 times over, I was a Never Trump voter back when it was relevant, back during the election cycle. I didn't like that Donald Trump took both sides of multiple arguments in order to get support, right? He would say one thing to one group of people, and then literally the next group of people, he would say something completely different. This made me nervous, and this lack of clarity on his position, his lack of trust that he was creating, made me not capable of supporting him for his bid for presidency. And I said from the beginning that for that election cycle that I would not be able to vote for him without that clarity, without him actually taking good conservative positions or recanting some of the hard left positions that he took during the campaign cycle. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about that later, because some of this has now become relevant with tax reform as far as the budget is concerned, and as far as this healthcare plan that has been approved. And so I just wanted to point out that I was on a break for a couple of weeks. I was refocusing my energy on my product photography business, Right Shot. I've spent a lot of time over the past, you know, decade and a half developing my photography business, my photography skills. I've worked for, you know, multiple Fortune 500 photography companies, product companies in the e-commerce space as a product photographer. And I've been kind of revamping that. And for those of you who are listening to this show that are interested in learning more about photography in general, whether it be portrait photography, night photography, just if you want to learn more about your camera, I have another show on iTunes called Right Shot Photography Talk, where I talk about that. And then I also have a whole series of photography walkthroughs on different types of techniques and some videos at my professional photography website, rightshot.org. And so, like I said, the last few weeks I've been focusing on that. I've been focusing on sort of the business side of what I do, my day job, and trying to kind of come into a new evolution as far as that business is concerned. And I wanted to be able to actually focus down on what I was doing. And a lot of this stuff was such a distraction, and it was putting me in such a bad mood that it was hard for me to sit down and be creative and come up with new ideas and execute those ideas. And for those of you who have spent time working in the art industry, you have to be clear, you have to be open, otherwise, you know, the creative juices just don't flow, you know. And so, like I said, I took a break. I decided to come back. I didn't want to be gone for too long, but I did want to take a break so I could catch my breath. I figured, you know, that there would always be news, especially with this new this new trend in politics. More and more people, and then this is something that I've constantly, over the past few months, been praising Donald Trump for, even though I dislike what Donald Trump is doing on several fronts. And some fronts I think he's doing, you know, not that bad. But on several fronts, I disagree with him. But the benefit of all of this is because he's so bombastic, he's so loud and even obnoxious at times, that it is keeping him at the front of the news cycle. It is, and it is keeping regular citizens engaged. And whether, you know, that's a good thing or a bad thing, you know, we're not completely sure, that the jury isn't completely in on that yet. But any time that the public at large takes more of an interest in what's happening in politics, that to me is, in my opinion, a good thing. I think it's positive that more people are at least paying attention. Now, there is a lot of fake news on both sides of the aisle. There's a lot of people on the right that are running this blind interference for Donald Trump, the Trump cultists. There is also another group, like I said, the Never Trump Cry Wolf cultists, that absolutely, it doesn't matter if it's a good thing or a bad thing, they're going to come down 100 miles per hour against it no matter what, because Trump is attached to that policy. And then there are the folks on the left that they don't even take the time to look at the policy. They just completely blindly hate Donald Trump no matter what, because he's not Hillary Clinton. And it's like I said, this is what led me to be overwhelmed and angry in the first place, which is why I took the break. But like I said, sometimes you need to take a few steps back. You need to catch your breath. I needed to spend some time with my family, and I needed to spend some time with my photography life. And so I am back. I will be continuing the show. I will be continuing to touch base with you folks on social media. the last couple days, I kind of slowly kind of trickled back into Facebook and started kind of having some dialogue with a few folks. You know, some of it nasty, some of it positive, even a few Trump supporters out there that I strongly disagreed with that are very, and some of them are very hateful sounding people, a lot of very angry people. You know, they still want to bring up Ted Cruz all the time, which is still just baffles me. But I was still able to have some kind of a dialogue where we could end on some kind of a middle ground, you know, where we could have some kind of agreement that at least, you know, we feel that, you know, I dislike Trump, you love Trump, but we both can agree that a mandate to buy health insurance is a bad thing. And so it's like, well, we can kind of shake hands and walk to opposite sides of the battlefield again. But this, you know, bootlicker, Trump humper kind of mentality coming from the conservative folks out there and the cry wolf cultists, you know, this is becoming really toxic. It's becoming really toxic because you're shooting and then aiming, right? You can't aim from the hip. You have to have more information than you have, because this can get dangerous very quickly. I mean, I found a lot of conservative people, so-called, that have argued against their own points that they were making just a couple of years ago. You know, and this is becoming a situation where what is more important to you? You know, is truth more important to you? Is reality more important to you? Or is having a hate on for Donald Trump because you don't, you know, you don't like how he handled himself, you don't like how he acted? Because, like I've said in the past shows, before, I thought that everybody kind of agreed with me, which was the reason I didn't like Trump was because of his policy. You know, I didn't like his ideas on some of his ideas on immigration. I didn't like a lot of his ideas on healthcare. I didn't like a lot of his ideas on, you name it. I mean, God, I have lists and lists and lists. I didn't like individual policies of Donald Trump. You know, and there was a couple that I did like. I like the idea of a border wall. I live in a border town, and I've seen what happens to places like where I live because of illegal immigration, because of the open flow of drug trafficking that occurs, and what that does to the communities close to the border. And so I've constantly been an advocate that we need a border wall, we need increased border security, we need increased border technology in addition to that wall. It was never the wall is the end-all, be-all, you know, this is the big fix that's going to solve all of our problems. It was always meant to be one cog in the wheel. You know, it was always meant, and it was an important cog, because you have to have some kind of a barrier to block. And then, of course, the cartels are always going to try and fly in. The cartels are always going to try and tunnel under any barrier that you put up. But then that still allows border enforcement to focus their attention with technology on those types of infiltration. And so, like I said, I wanted to kind of point out that, yes, there's a lot of good and a lot of bad that's been occurring. I don't look at the situation like, oh, well, you know, at least Hillary Clinton's not in the White House. Okay, that was never really a factor for me. That it's like, well, we have to vote for X because of Y. I don't vote against people. I vote for people. That's how you get my vote. You have to convince me to vote for you. And I didn't like what Donald Trump had to say, so I didn't vote for him. I didn't like what Hillary Clinton had to say, so I didn't vote for her. You know, and a lot of my predictions about Donald Trump are slowly but surely coming true. Before I get into some of that, though, I want to talk about very quickly, very briefly, about a group that's been getting a lot of notoriety the last few weeks, starting with riots and protests that occurred in UC Berkeley. And I was extremely disturbed, being from Southern California, to see what was occurring on the University of California, Berkeley campus. Okay, this is a campus that is, you know, it's state funded. It's not a private institution per se. It's not like, you know, like Harvard or, you know, whatever. It is an institution that is connected to the state of California. And the idea that this Antifa group was allowed to throw rocks, beat people with sticks, with nails sticking out of them. There are reports on the Ben Shapiro show and Mark Levin show where they interviewed folks that were actually on site and saw specifically a woman that was putting quarter sticks of dynamite, M80s, down inside of wine bottles and throwing them into crowds. One woman had part of her face practically filleted off the bone from these IEDs that these people were throwing. And I posed the question on social media, should Antifa be classified as a domestic terrorist group? Specifically, and I didn't elaborate, this is my elaborating now, specifically because they're using terror-like tactics in order to get their point across. They're showing up covered in black with their faces covered. They're showing up with weapons, which proves intent, that their intent is to show up to fight. They're showing up with a bag full of M80s and wine bottles, showing up with a stick with a nail sticking out of it, showing up with weapons to a protest is not protected by the Second Amendment, okay? Or the First Amendment, rather. You're not allowed to non-peaceably assemble, okay? The peaceably assembling is protected by the First Amendment, but not rioting, okay? Not mob violence. That is not protected by the First Amendment. That is not a First Amendment tactic. And I feel that it's disingenuous that these people are kind of being treated by the left as something different than that. There are several people that are typically that lean left that have come out in opposition to Antifa, which I found kind of refreshing. There was a Tucker Carlson interview with Richard Dreyfuss. I don't know why I drew a blank on that. Richard Dreyfuss was on, and he kind of like hijacked an interview about something else to kind of point out that he thinks that this is not correct. This is not how people should be acting. They should not be violently trying to suppress opposing viewpoints on these campuses. And I completely agree. This has been going on for a long time. It's just this Antifa thing has gotten a lot of notoriety because they've been violent. They were extremely violent on May Day. May 1st, there's several reports. This is an international issue, okay, because there were extreme violent occurrences in Paris from Antifa, people seen wearing the logo of Antifa, people in Philadelphia, people all over the United States in these groups protesting conservatives, protesting right-wing speakers. And again, I don't necessarily even like many of the people that they're protesting against. It's just their tactics force folks like myself, like say for example Ann Coulter, right? I stopped liking Ann Coulter after she wrote that book, How to Talk to a Liberal If You Must or whatever. It was a book from a long time ago. Gosh, I read that in like 2004, 2005, something like that. It was a book from a long time ago. I thought the book was pretty good. I liked that she cited a lot of her source material in the back, like a third of the book was source material, which I think is a really awesome thing. If you're going to write a book about politics and you're going to mention a lot of things that occur, you should probably source your material. But I liked a lot of what she had to say back then. But slowly but surely over the past few years, she's kind of become a one-trick pony. And I don't really like a lot of her tactics. I didn't like that she was willing to give Donald Trump a pass, for example, to not quote her, but to roughly quote her, that she would be okay with Trump performing abortions in the White House if he followed through with his promises on illegal immigration and the border wall. And it's like that whole, I'm willing to sacrifice everything else I believe in for this one thing, I think is a dangerous, it's a dangerous mindset to have, and it's a dangerous mindset to propagate within the conservative community, because then we end up trashing the vast majority of what we believe in order to achieve a specific end. And I lump Ann Coulter in with people like the Cry Wolf community, that they are also this one-track mind, that they're willing to throw away things that they believed in yesterday in order to achieve some other political end. And I see it as dangerous on both sides of the argument. The left continues to do what the left does. The left has always been about violence to get their way. They're very good at standing up and saying that we're protesting against violence as they beat somebody in the head with a baseball bat, as they set cars on fire, as they set buildings on fire, as they attack people that are just peaceably protesting or peaceably having a rally in support of something. The left has been very, very good at making itself into a very public hypocrite. And I like to point out this phenomenon, because I know that folks like family members of mine that went to college, that came back from college, radical leftists, radical liberals, because they believe that the left stands up for the First Amendment. The left is about freedom, that the left is about equal opportunity and fair treatment of everybody, and not suppressing the voice and rights of other people. And it is constantly being proven that the exact opposite is true. The idea that the administration and the law enforcement officials at UC Berkeley would give stand down orders to the police officers that were on site during these violent riots that were occurring, the aggressive, literally just brawls that broke out. And again, the Trump supporters didn't show up with weapons. These people didn't show up with their faces covered, you know, brandishing weapons and whatnot. These people showed up to have a rally and to be a positive force. And again, I may disagree with each and every one of those people on politics. Okay, I may disagree with each and every one of them, whereas Trump is concerned. I don't agree with their message about Trump in a lot of ways, not every way. But that doesn't mean that I think that there should be any kind of violence played out on them. And the hatred coming from the so-called conservative right against what happened initially when the photographs first started showing up of the Trump supporters getting beaten by these people, there was a lot of like ha ha ha's and couldn't have happened to a nicer group of people comments that were floating around. And to me, this is just disgusting. Okay, this is very quickly capable of turning into something that the left has always accused us of, which is being for the suppression of free speech as long as it's speech that we disagree. Like, if you disagree with the speech, then it's okay that it's suppressed. And like I said, to surrender other principles because you have one political goal, which is to crush Trump and his supporters, to crush the bootlickers, to crush the Trump humpers at any and all costs, you end up destroying the argument that you've been making for years, that no, we want everyone to have a voice, we want everyone to have access to information. We may disagree with our final conclusion on what that information means. We may disagree on what is credible information or not, which is the case. The Trump supporters and people like myself and the cultist, the Cry Wolf folks, we all seem to have this strong disagreement on what is actually credible information and what is not. But again, that is what makes America such a great place to live in, is that we're all able to have these differing opinions, these differing viewpoints, having trust and faith in different points of view, and then we can meet on the battlefield of ideas and we can actually debate whether or not my information is more accurate. And if you say, well, mine's accurate, yours isn't, you're dumb, well, clearly you don't actually have information to back yourself up. You're just jumping straight to the name calling, which is, again, why I think it's ridiculous that a lot of these so-called conservatives are constantly ripping on Trump humpers and the bootlickers and whatnot, by calling them names, you know. And like I said, during the election cycle, it's a whole different ballgame, right? We're trying to push an agenda, we're trying to push ideas forward, we're trying to convince people that they're being duped. But at this point, there really isn't much to be gained from that. At the time, pre-election, us coming out and saying, you people are blind, you people are ridiculous, you know, you people are Trump-tards because you're taking in two pieces of information said by the same person and you're saying, well, the one that I like is true, the one I don't like isn't true. That actually had a purpose, because now it doesn't matter what Trump says, okay? Now it matters what Trump actually does. That's the only thing that is relevant to me now, which is why I keep trying to tell people that they need to get off of this bandwagon. You have to get off of the bandwagon. And so when situations like Antifa pop up, or when groups like Antifa pop up and they're doing things, you know, it can't be about the people that Antifa was attacking. It has to be about the fact that there is a group of radical leftists who claim to be anti-fascism, even though they use all the tactics of fascists to get their point across, rather than say, this is about how screwed up Donald Trump supporters are. Let's laugh and point and say, ha ha ha, because that doesn't move any kind of objective forward. And the reality is that they're not just protesting against Trump supporters. They're protesting against anything that's on the right. and I just happened to come to fruition with a lot of Trump people. What else about Antifa? There's some other articles that have been put out. That the Blaze reported that they have ties to NAMBLA, which I thought was, I don't know, I thought that was really, really, I thought that was interesting. The Blaze reported Antifa group behind violent riots discovered to have ties to pedophile group, the North American Man-Boy Love Association. Okay, the Antifa group known as the Coalition to Defend Affirmative Action, Integration, and Immigrants' Rights, and the Fight for Equality by Any Means Necessary, or BAM, had led several anti-right riots, including against provocateur Milo, and were behind plans to disrupt Ann Coulter's appearance before it was canceled. This BAM organization, the Revolutionary Workers League in Detroit, had worked directly with NAMBLA, which I thought was really kind of telling. These people are just disgusting. And as much as I'm spending some time talking about them, I don't want to give them too much of my time and too much of my energy, other than to say that if you go to one of these rallies, if you go to one of these protests, or you go to a speech, like I said, I go to speeches sometimes of people that I disagree with. And, you know, I don't mind listening to people that I disagree with because I think it's healthy. Be on your guard. I mean, these people are actually they're coming to fight. They're coming to be aggressive. They're bringing violence and they're bringing fear with them. And so you have to be on guard. And I think it's really telling that they would align themselves in any way with groups like NAMBLA. And if nothing else, it's funny to point it out because, you know, these people are just disgusting. And other than that, you know, my thoughts on how a group like this can gain traction in the first place, this has been a trend. You know, if you look at the left-leaning media, the CNN, the MSNBC, the ABC, CBS, anytime that there was like a riot, anytime that there was some violent gathering of people in protest of some kind of left-wing agenda, the media on the left, they call these people, you know, they call them freedom fighters, they call them champions of free speech, they call them champions of women, they call them champions of affirmative action. You know, you have Democratic politicians coming out and saying, like, this is the same fight that we were fighting during the Civil War or the Civil Rights era, that these people, you know, they have to stand up, they have to be heard, and they're doing what they have to so that they can be heard and all that. And these people are burning buildings down. These people are beating people mercilessly in the streets, and they're getting praise. And this kind of action, this kind of activity, which is why I ripped on the cultist cry wolf people on the right, is that because a lot of people were out there, you know, laughing, or at first, you know, I think a lot of them have quickly backtracked on that. They backpedaled on it, especially from when I posed the question, should they be considered a domestic terrorist group? A lot of people that I would lump into that group kind of said, yeah, I think that they should be. But the reality is that because the hard left has been greenlighting and giving the thumbs up to these people, that's why there is this escalation. It's going to continue to get worse until folks like, you know, Richard Dreyfuss, until folks that, like, on CNN or MSNBC start coming out and saying, hey, this is not how we do things. That this is not, these people aren't of the left. These people aren't, you know, part of us. We don't associate with them. They have to decry this. They have to shout this down, because this cannot be the new normal. This cannot be the new normal, because people need to not be showing up to these political rallies attempting to peaceably assemble and have to come armed. This is not how civilized communities exist. We have a debate, we have an argument, we can disagree, we can even yell a little bit, but to get physically and aggressively violent, that's not how civilized people act. And that is what I at least previously believed this nation to be, that we were a group of civilized people. And so I just wanted to kind of point that out. Those are my thoughts on Antifa for now. And as more news kind of rolls out, and like I said, I was going to get in more elaborate. I pulled up, I have like, what is it? 1, 2, 3. I have about 8 stories here on Antifa from the last couple of weeks that I was going to talk about. Realistically, a lot of other people, you know, the Ben Shapiro's, the Mark Levin's and so on, they've done a lot of reporting on this. And these are people that I know a lot of you also listen to. So I didn't want to beat a dead horse too much, other than to just let you know kind of where I came down on it. I do believe that they should be classified as a domestic terrorist group. They're terrorists, and I believe they should be treated as such. So we're going to move on now. I'm going to take a breath, and we're going to move on to part two of show 63. We're going to talk a little bit about the budget. We're going to talk a little bit about taxes and this health care bill. And we're going to wrap up with whether or not the Republican Party is in a state of demise. Is the Republican Party, is the future of the GOP sealed? You know, have they sealed their fate? And so we'll be back in a minute, and we will talk about that. Stay right. Welcome back to Stay Right, ladies and gentlemen. Segment number two of show 63, Republican Demise. I wanted to talk a little bit about the budget that was kicked out on May 1st, on May Day. And there's some issues that I had that clearly everyone else has, including, thank God, finally, Rush Limbaugh, finally, Laura Ingraham, some of the former respected voices on the right that have completely sold themselves out. They're finally waking up, right? Now they're outraged, right, that all these things that Trump kind of promised he was going to do that he's actually doing, which is reasons that folks like myself wouldn't vote for him. But there's a few things on this list, and I'm going to be citing from the Conservative Review, Daniel Horowitz, Betrayal Beyond Belief, Dem Priorities Funded, Dem Priorities Funded Trump's Scuttled. There's a whole list on here. The bill continues to fund refugee settlements, sanctuary cities, Planned Parenthood. It increases spending for a number of liberal priorities. The EPA is being funded. They're bailing out Puerto Rico, which is a huge problem. This is setting a really dangerous precedent in the future that basically the states can be as, states like my state, California, they can be as absolutely reckless as they want to be with their finances. They can go deeply into debt. They can blow themselves out financially, and the federal government, the federal taxpayer dollars, folks in Tennessee, folks in Florida will be paying taxes to bail out the idiots that are running California, you know. And again, I'm in California, and it does affect me, but at the same time, you know, I don't think people in Tennessee, I don't think people in Minnesota should be funding a bailout for California. I think California needs to be forced to get its own house in order. There's an increase of H-2B, low-skill worker visas. There's an increase for food for peace for Africa. Government-run healthcare is going to get a $2.8 billion boost. More money to green energy programs, which is just, I'm literally sitting here shaking my head. I don't understand. The federal judiciary got a budget increase. Like, all these things that Trump has been coming out recently and decrying and talking trash on, and, you know, to try and throw red meat to the base. These budget plans, this stuff, it is completely contradictory to where these people said that they were, right? And then here's the big one, okay? And this is the one I'm going to get into for the next few minutes, because it's something that, like I said earlier, is near and dear to my heart, the border wall. Now, there was $1.5 billion added to border security, which I think is a great thing, okay? Don't kid yourself. This is a great thing, okay? $1.5 billion for increase in border security is necessary. Okay, I believe that. I absolutely believe that we need to be more strict on enforcing border security. We need more boots on the ground at the border. We need more technology in place. We need to change a lot of things, because the border security has been heavily dismantled over the past 8 years. And so there's a lot of work to be done, a lot of technology to be upgraded, a lot of tactics to be upgraded on the border. That being said, the border wall is not funded. And again, Daniel Horowitz wrote another bill, or another bill. He wrote another article with Nate Madden that the omnibus is far worse than you think on border security. Basically, this is something that folks like myself said. I have been saying for quite some time, and I've been arguing with people, and I've said it on the show several times. the border wall has been law of the land since 2006, okay? We all knew that, or at least a lot of us did, because a lot of us have been talking about this pre-2006. And in fact, the border wall was one of the conditions that was put forward when President Ronald Reagan did a big amnesty push back in the 80s. He was kind of duped into agreeing to supply amnesty to a bunch of illegals that were here with the condition that a border wall would be built and that enforcement on future violators would be ramped up. And that never happened. And so he kind of said later that he really regretted doing that, because had he known that they weren't going to follow through with their end of the bargain, he would never have done the amnesty push. And the same thing, the Secure Fence Act of 2006 mandated that we have a multi-layered fence, okay? At least a two-layered fence along the southern border. And it turns out that this new spending requirement says specifically that this $1.5 billion that's being put into border enforcement, it is forbidden from being used for a border wall. In fact, they make it so now, because there was a Secure Fence Act of 2006, and I believe Mark Levin pointed this out on his show, that it was, in fact, the law of the land, that we had a mandate to build this wall, that any president could have continued to build this wall. Barack Obama found a way to get out of it. George Bush started building parts of the wall. And that all Donald Trump had to do was use discretionary funding to, in fact, build the wall. He had the ability to do it. But now, because of this new bill that's been passed, now it's actually forbidden from being built with any of this money at all. And so literally the Republicans in Congress just made it illegal to use discretionary funding to build a border wall. And the Trump people are out there, the Republican, the cultists are out there screaming that this is some big, great victory for Trump's agenda, when in fact it is diametrically opposed to his agenda. I do not understand where everyone is coming down on this. There is, like I said, a small group of radio talk show hosts and bloggers that are talking about this, that have been pointing this out. Like I said, Daniel Horowitz wrote a really good article about it. Check it out, a Conservative Review. It doesn't even make sense. We're funding all of these other countries. We're building structures in their countries. We're spending money to secure other nations, but we are not taking money out of our own taxpayer pockets to defend and secure our nation. This does not make sense to me. This is completely the opposite of what Donald Trump proposed and promised to his base. Okay, he didn't even promise it to me. He promised it to his base, and now they're out there going, oh, yeah, well, you know, it is what it is. It's like, yeah, the wall's going to be built. Don't worry, the wall's going to be built. When? I've said it for quite some time now, and so I don't like to make predictions, because clearly I was wrong. I said Trump wouldn't get elected, and he did. But I'm going to propose another prediction, and I said this, I think, 5 or 6 shows ago, the same prediction. If this wall is not under heavy construction, like on the way to being completed by the end of Donald Trump's first term, I do not believe there will be a second term. I do not believe there will be a second term. And in fact, I believe that sometime late 2018, early 2019, that there will be a push to primary Trump, that there will be somebody that steps up. I don't think it's going to be Ted Cruz. Someone is going to step up to challenge Donald Trump on this. And there are several people that I think are really going to step up and challenge, because this border wall was the number one rallying cry for him and his base. And so far, it seems like they're doing everything that they can to not follow through on this promise. And this is one of the very few promises that I actually agree with. I mean, putting aside the healthcare bill, which I'm going to get to in like 2 seconds, I absolutely, for years, have agreed that we need a border wall. I don't care. I'm actually okay with Mexico not paying for it. I never wanted Mexico to pay for it. I want the thing to get built. I don't want to worry about converting pesos to dollars or whatever. I don't want to increased, you know, some kind of a commerce situation with Mexico. I don't care if we have to outsource materials from China. I don't care if the materials to build the wall were made in Taiwan or if they were made in the United States. I want a wall. I want the wall built. It needs to be a secure structure. It needs to implement underground seismic technology so we can determine whether or not people are tunneling over. It needs to have some kind of a, you know, radar situation set up so we can specifically, you know, see if low-flying planes are smuggling drugs and people into the country over the top of the wall. Like, there needs to be more security at the border. This was something, one of the few things that I absolutely was, okay, Trump, I can get on board with that. That pretty much alone during the campaign cycle. Again, this one issue is not enough to get my vote. You have to actually prove that you're conservative in other ways to get my vote, like, you know, wanting to reduce the size and scope of government, like in anything. But there you have it. There was one positive thing in the spending bill, and I wanted to wrap the talk about the spending bill on a positive note, that in fact they did add $15 billion to military spending, which I think is great. I think it should be more, honestly. People always say, like, oh, it's not right that we spend so much on our military. It's like a bazillion times more than every other country combined. And I'm like, I don't care. Whatever it was yesterday, if we have the ability to do it financially, which sometimes we do, sometimes we don't, double it. You know, I want the second most powerful military in the world to be an absolute joke. I want it to be like Pee Wee football versus the NFL freaking Super Bowl champions. That's what I want it to be at all times. Okay, because I believe that this is the greatest country on earth. I believe that we have a mandate, whether it be just historically or whether it be from God or whatever you want to call it. I believe that we have a privilege of living in this country, and everywhere we go, we bring positive things with us. We make mistakes, we do things incorrectly sometimes, but our motivation is typically positive. And we usually try and stick around and solve the problems if we create them. Again, I'm not saying that we're perfect. I'm not saying that we don't make mistakes all the time, because we do. We mess up all the time. Okay, a lot of how we've handled the Middle East has been a disaster. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have gone in the first place. It just means that our tactics were poor and we need to learn from our mistakes and move forward. And so I really feel... this is so... I'm like stuttering. It's been a while since I've done this show, so I'm maddened by this right now. But I just wanted to point this out, that there was something positive, that we're doing more spending. Okay, so I don't want to get too sidetracked. We're doing more spending on military because, you know, Barack Obama seriously crippled our military. He dramatically reduced the size of our military. I mean, we're still the most powerful military force in the world, but other nations were increasing their spending and ramping up their military while we were decreasing our military spending and tapering down our military. And that needed to move in the opposite direction. And so here we are. Back to the issues with some of these taxes and things that are being discussed. I'm going to briefly point out, I did a whole show on this way, 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 way back when. I don't know if it was like show 5 or something. The left and their concept and their ideas about taxation and whatnot, you know, Chuck Schumer talking about tax reform and all that. These people, I don't even know how to argue with them, really. I mean, if you hear Bernie Sanders is still out there saying that he would be for a 90% tax on the top 1%, which is basically any joint household income over like $390,000 a year. Just so you know, the basic math on that, okay, we'll say $400,000 a year. If you tax somebody, a joint household income of $400,000, if you tax them at 90%, that family that was making $400,000 a year is now making $40,000 a year. Okay, joint household income after taxes. Okay, that's federal tax. That's not even including what happens to them at the state level. That's not even including to, you know, all of the other expenses that they have. So people that make nearly $500,000 basically get taxed into a different tax bracket. And to put it even more perspective, if somebody made, for example, $2 million a year, $2 million a year, they would be bringing home after taxes about $200,000 a year, which is a lot of money, but it's nothing if you made $2 million a year. And the idea of the government getting to take 90 cents on the dollar for every dollar that you earn is just disgusting to me. It's flat out slavery. It's theft. If not slavery, at least indentured servitude. And that's not what this country is about. And so, like I said, I've heard a lot of people chattering about tax reforms, and people on the left have been having quite a bit to say about it. I know Hillary Clinton proposed an increase to 30% on taxation, getting ever closer to 50 cents on the dollar, which is kind of what their short-term goals were. But again, their long-term goal is to get back between 70 and 90% taxes, which is more than half of what you make. You would then, at that point, be a minority shareholder in the product of your labor. And that is an absolutely horrifying place to be, you know, that becoming a minority shareholder in the product of your own labor, that basically your life. You're the minority shareholder in your life, because the time that you spent is at work is played out in the compensation that you receive. And if the government has more of a right to it than you do, then the government essentially has more of a right to the product of your life than you do. And that's a very dangerous place. So, yuck. Yikes, right? I mean, come on. Seriously. So that leaves us with just a couple more issues that I wanted to talk about. One of them was the health care bill, okay? And as of today, the health care bill was passed in the House. It was passed with votes to spare, I think some of the articles said. They needed 212. They got 217 votes. And I'm just going to say, I don't even understand what's happening here. I don't understand. We were promised, okay? We were promised by Marco Rubio. We were promised by Ted Cruz. We were promised by just about everybody out of this, just about every single one of the 17 candidates for President of the United States that announced in 2015, just about every single one of them promised a full repeal of Obamacare. Some said full repeal, some said repeal and replace. But a full repeal of the disastrous mess that is Obamacare. This is what we were all told. This is what we were all promised. And now, the hardcore cultists that will follow anything that Trump says are making excuses for this. And there's a lot of these people that on the other side, right, the cry wolf cultists, a lot of them I would see in social media, they were putting all of their faith into this Freedom Caucus, right? Everybody kept saying, oh yeah, we have to stay united with the Freedom Caucus. We have to, and they were just constantly like, oh, the Freedom Caucus has our back. The Freedom Caucus, the Freedom Caucus, the Freedom Caucus. The Freedom Caucus was never pushing for a full repeal of Obamacare. Okay, that was never this goal at this last push. Okay, maybe initially before the AHCA was proposed by the by Congress, but once the new Trump Care bill was proposed, the Freedom Caucus and Mark Meadows specifically has never come out and said they don't agree with it because they want a full repeal of Obamacare. They didn't agree with it because they didn't like a couple of things that were in Trump Care. They just didn't like a couple things, right? They didn't like a couple of the mandates that were in there. And I agree. I didn't like the mandates that were in there either. It's pretty much the same thing as Obamacare. They just change who the benefits get paid to. They change who the penalties get paid to, right? They did change in this new healthcare revision that that the companies with 50 or more people have to opt in. They gave each individual state the right to opt out on that. They gave, which, you know, all the blue states are definitely not going to opt out. They're all going to continue as they were, which is like half of the states in the country. And so that really doesn't solve that problem. It's only going to benefit the red states. And then in addition to that, the mandate in those states, like I said, has changed. But essentially, it is still government-mandated healthcare. The government is still determining exactly what policies qualify, what coverage needs to be inside of those policies, and it dramatically limits the ability for people and new insurance companies to sprout up and stay competitive with the big dogs, which is the problem in the first place. The whole problem is that this does not, that what has happened to the health insurance industry is that competition has been stifled. The top five major health insurance companies are the only players in town. And after this health care bill passes, we may see a small increase to like 9 major health care insurance covered carriers. But there will be no room for these small groups and small state and localities to prop up and say, hey, you know, you just want basic coverage, you just want this, we have that for you, and we can make that available. And if you, because now if you buy, say for example, I'm just worried about cough and cold kind of stuff, flu shots, etc. I'm not looking to get some kind of catastrophic care. I'm not looking to get like, you know, oh my gosh, you know, my arm is broken care. I'm not looking for any of that. I'm just looking for the basic, go in for a couple checkups a year, maybe at the most, and that's it. Maybe a few screenings, but I don't want all this crazy care. I can buy that policy. The insurance companies can create a package for me right now. They would be able to do that. However, if I, at a later time, decided that I wanted to increase my coverage and actually get something that would fall into the lines of Trump care, those insurance companies would then be able to charge me they would be mandated to charge me a 30% added fee for signing up at that time. But that has not changed. The penalty, or the, I guess, the backdoor mandate that has been created has not disappeared from this new iteration of the healthcare bill. And so there's, you know, Obamacare was bad because you had to pay that money to the IRS, or you could be, you know, imprisoned up to a year. I don't think anybody went to prison for a year, but you would get a big penalty. You would get a big fee attached to you. And now, instead of paying the IRS, that fee would then go to the insurance carrier that you ended up signing with down the road. And it would be applied to you for every month after 63 days, I think it was, that you didn't have coverage. So say I went like 5 years without coverage, I would be slammed for the next 5 years when I decided to get coverage, which I think is reckless. I think it's stupid. But in addition to that, I don't think that the government should have any role in telling me how to go into commerce. That they yes, I do believe that there should be some kind of restrictions on dumping people because they have a pre-existing condition, right? It's determined that, you know, you sign up for health insurance, you get health insurance coverage, you've had health insurance coverage, but it turns out you've had heart disease and it was undiagnosed. You know, they in the past perhaps could have said that that's a pre-existing condition that predated your insurance coverage, so then they can dump you or not provide care for you on their plan, which I think is ridiculous. I think you, in good faith, have, you know, you've gotten insurance with them. They need to cover you for that because you have insurance. But this whole idea that, you know, I can walk in off the street and go, yeah, I'm in like, you know, a stage 2 cancer, you know, I've had it for a couple of years, but I want your plan now, you know, that now this company has to accept me is ridiculous. You know, you don't wait until you get sick and then go in and get health insurance. There's all kinds of charitable organizations that are out there for people that are terminally ill. I think that more needs to be done to increase funding for those people as far as charitable giving. There was a story that Ben Shapiro told on his show earlier in the week about the hospital that his daughter and Jimmy Kimmel's child, they both went to in Los Angeles, the Children's Hospital, that's almost completely funded by charitable, or it's completely funded by charitable giving, hundreds of millions of dollars a year. I think that by the government removing itself from the healthcare industry for the small numbers of cases, percentage-wise, of people that come up with these terminal illnesses, I think that there would be more charitable organizations and more charitable hospitals that would exist to give these people care. These charitable organizations, these 501c3s and whatnot, these groups would then be able to negotiate with medical industry or medicine industries and big pharma and whatnot, and get discounted rates because it is a charitable organization to provide care and coverage for people that are sick and dying. And again, it's like I would never be opposed to helping people when they're sick. It's been the law of the land since 1986 that you can walk in off the street and get life-saving care. You can walk in on the street, off the street, and they'll if you're going to lose your arm, they'll have to give you care. I think it was life and limb was part of the provision in that. And so nothing has really changed there. Okay, and now all of these Trump people that are out there talking about how we can't repeal Obamacare. We can't repeal Obamacare because what are poor people going to do, right? Because poor people didn't actually have health insurance before. Apparently, there are only 10 million poor people in this country. Or 12, what was it? Find my numbers. It was 12 to 18. Apparently, there was only 12 to 18 million poor people in this country. Just in case you didn't know, there are only 12 to 18 poor people, 18 million poor people in this country. Because since 2010, that is all that has happened. That is the only increase that has occurred. Between 12 and 18 million more people have signed up for health care through Obamacare. 12 to 18 million people, right? The number of uninsured in this country, people that couldn't afford insurance, allegedly, or didn't want to pay for insurance. People always lump that number and they say, oh, it's people that couldn't afford health insurance. It's 46 million people. When in fact, a lot of those people didn't want health insurance. A lot of those people didn't feel the need to buy health insurance. So out of the 46, 28 are still uninsured after all this. So that's between 40 and 46 before, and now it's at 28. That's between 12 and 18 million people that have signed up since Obamacare has become the, big quote fingers, law of the land. Okay, and so now there's a lot of Trump supporters out there saying, oh, we can't repeal it. To think that we would repeal it is just naive. Like, I'm sorry. We were promised that it would be repealed. We were promised that it would be repealed. And that's why I kept telling everyone, do not put all of your faith in this Freedom Caucus group to stand up, because these people are not, they're good in many ways, okay? I agree with a lot of what the Freedom Caucus is for. I like the Freedom Caucus, but I did not have faith that the Freedom Caucus would be pushing for a full repeal of Obamacare and then a replacement with what I call deregulation bills, bills that remove government and government mandates from the health insurance industry to increase competition across state lines, to increase competition on policy coverage by removing the government's footprint, so to speak, off of the throats of these companies, saying like, yeah, if you want to have basic sniffle coverage, you can. If you just want to provide catastrophic care, you can. It doesn't matter. The government doesn't care as long as you are not treating these people with fraud. If you're not saying that it's full coverage when it's only this or whatever. That's the whole role of government, in my opinion, is to have a very narrow presence, a very small presence when health insurance is concerned. They should have a presence, but it should be very small, very minimal, mostly just to make sure that nobody is being treated unfairly, nobody is being treated with fraud. And so what was it that I think it was it Mark Meadows? I believe it was Mark Meadows. The fact is that it being this new bill, the fact is that it addresses pre-existing conditions in three different ways. It's nothing short of not only keeping our campaign promise, but doing so in a variety of ways that gives us plenty to remind people that we are keeping our campaign promises. This is Mark Meadows. This is the head of the Freedom Caucus in response to this ACH or AHCA, basically Trump Care, this new passage of Trump Care that just occurred. Okay, so Mark Meadows is out there basically saying that this new Trump Care bill is in multiple ways keeping their campaign promise. When just yesterday, all these people on these Facebook groups were saying that the Freedom Caucus is about the full repeal and replacement of Obamacare and nothing short and nothing less, because that was what they promised. And now the Freedom Caucus leader is out there basically saying that, yes, this abomination of a health care bill is exactly keeping their promise. This is why you cannot put all of your eggs in one basket. This is why you cannot make gods of men. This is why you cannot necessarily put faith in these people. These people are politically motivated to play ball. And there are very few politicians on the right that are actually willing to step up and do what they said they would do. And that's kind of my segue into the last little part of this show is about the Republican Party and whether or not this is an indicator of the Republican demise. I have long said that the Republican Party is hurting. I've seen it. I've seen a lot of people out there advocating for a third party. I was very briefly part of that group of people when I got very emotional over Ted Cruz's seeming. It seemed as though Ted Cruz had betrayed us, but but I very quickly saw what he was doing and backtracked on that, and I apologized for my initial jumping of the gun on that idea. But realistically, I've done entire shows about the GOP exodus and the idea of walking away from the GOP and abandoning the Republican Party and letting it just fall apart on its own and pushing for the Federalist Party or the Constitution Party or the American Party or whatever. Or, you know, the new Conservative Party, or, you know, there's like already dozens of other parties that exist. The third runner-up to the Republican and the Democrat Party being the Libertarian Party. And as I've long said, and for those of you the first time listening to the show, I'll share the numbers again. The Libertarian Party has existed since the late 70s, okay? And a lot of people, they have name recognition. They have a brand. You see these people front and center when the big debates kind of start to prop up, or when the political season gets hot and heavy. You know, we all saw Gary Johnson and what a joke that he was. But after decades upon decades, over 30 years of the Libertarian Party being around, they still have just over 500,000 people in that party. Just over 500,000 people. And this is after Jimmy Carter. This is after Ronald Reagan. This is after the big defeat of George Bush by Bill Clinton. This is after George W. Bush. This is after Barack Obama. This is after all these groups, right? All of these different political groups that have kind of sprouted up and died out in protest to this, you know, rhino president or this rhino politician. The best, a handful of seats in Congress and a small number of seats in states and localities. No presidential candidate has gotten close. Their membership nationwide is at about 500,000 people, okay? The Republican Party is over 31 million people and rising, okay? Same thing with the Democrat Party. The idea that some new party is going to spring up and be in competition with not only the Republican Party and the Democrat Party, but then just the Libertarian Party, that you're going to continue to split the vote rather than focus on what we need to be focusing on, okay? We need to be focusing on getting rid of the rhinos in the Republican Party. We need to focus on getting rid of this leftist infiltration that has occurred. And I've done entire shows about the leftist infiltration. I've written articles about the leftist infiltration, okay? There are maybe a few hundred politicians in the Republican Party that need to go. And if we got rid of them, chances are we would be able to put the pressure on to fix the party. We would be able to prove by getting rid of them that there is a trend to move further to the right. But because every time the going gets tough, the hardcore conservatives in the party would rather run off to a third party, there's never going to be a political will to out these people in the Republican Party. You leave the Republican Party and the politicians in the party don't care what you think. You're not part of their party anymore. If I had a group and you left the group and you protested, your group needs to be more like this. I'm like, what do I care what you think? You're not in my group. Do you care? For those of you who are out there listening, those of you who are GOP exodus people, right? Do you care what the Democrats think of your party? Do you care what the radical left thinks your party should be? Do you even, have you ever cared what they actually thought of you? Because they're not in your party. They're not part of your group. So if you leave the Republican Party to start your own thing, to be part of your own thing, what makes you think the Republicans are going to give a flip about what you want? The other thing is that, okay, so now you do that, you have to steal not only the entire Libertarian Party, every third party vote that exists, but then you have to steal the entire Republican Party in order to continue to be competitive with the Democrat Party. Because the Democrat Party has more people in it than the Republican Party does, I believe, last I checked. So you have to steal away all of those people, or you have to engage people that yesterday could not care less about politics, that weren't part of any party. We're talking decades and decades and decades for you to actually achieve this goal. I'm not saying it's impossible. I'm saying the idea that you're going to do this in any kind of realistic time frame is insane. and infinitely more difficult than getting rid of hundreds and hundreds of bad actors in the Republican Party, considering the fact that we got rid of nearly 1,000 Democrats through elections over the past 8 years because of the mandate that Obama gave us by creating a left-wing Leviathan for us to stand up shoulder to shoulder against. By giving us an enemy to fight against, we were able to stand up as a group and vote out almost 1,000 Democrats from office. It can be done. We can do it in our own party. That clearly is easier and will take less time than starting a whole new thing from scratch or hijacking another party and forcing them to change their platform and then hoping that the vast majority, if not the entirety, of the Republican Party comes over to your side. It doesn't make sense. And what you are doing, and as much as I love you and I respect you because I get your motivation for wanting to start this third party thing, I get it. Every time there's a defeat in the news, every time Trump does something that's left, everyone starts screaming and crying and kicking their feet on the ground and saying, oh my gosh, we need a third party. This is ridiculous. The Republican Party is dead. Okay, I get why you're upset. Okay, and I agree with why you're upset. But what you're doing by pushing for this third party is you are dividing our forces. It's like when you play Risk. You don't want to spread the butter too thin. You don't want to have just one piece over here, one piece over here. You want to have a force unified for one goal. And by dividing our forces out there, by spreading the force, like, oh, we're going to have the Constitution Party. We're going to have the American Party. We're going to have the New Libertarian Party. We're going to have the American Constitution Party, the Federalist Party. All of these different parties, what you're doing is you're dividing focus and attention away from what we need to be doing, which is creating a force to stand in opposition of the Democrat left. And the Republican Party, if we remove these bad actors, is still the greatest force that exists politically to stand in opposition to the radical left. It is hands down the only force that exists that can stand in opposition to the radical left for the next 2 decades, at least. At least. Stop dividing our attention. Target individuals. We have to get the roll call. We have to find out who voted which way. This information does exist. We can find out who voted for what. We can find out who has betrayed our agenda. We can see who goes on the news and reverses what they said just yesterday. We can see all of this. We can try and primary these people. We can try and engage on these people. And if you think it's easy to engage people to join a whole new party with no proven track record, and you think that's easier than saying, hey, look, this guy that said he was for you lied to you. He said he was going to do this. Play the audio of him saying he was going to fully repeal Obamacare. Now play a clip, 5 clips of him on the different talk shows and TV shows saying, well, no, we could never really completely repeal Obamacare, and use this information that exists to defeat them. We have YouTube. We have MP3 downloads of radio shows and all these different interviews that these people have done. We have their voting records. It will be easier to defeat them this way than to try and create a third party. And I'm sorry, and this is for, there's a few of you out there, I just love you to death, I swear to you. This is out of love. Ted Cruz is not going to join the Constitution Party. He's not going to join the Federalist Party. It's not going to happen, okay? So seriously, you need to get past that. Ted Cruz is going to continue to fight to save the Republican Party. And for each and every one of you that leaves the Republican Party, you're abandoning Ted Cruz, you're abandoning Mike Lee, you're abandoning all of these conservatives who are fighting tooth and nail to save the party, to save the country. You are abandoning them, because every time one of you leaves, and I'm not talking about continuing to fund the Republican Party, okay? Let me clarify that. I should have done that earlier. Stop paying money to the Republican Party, but don't leave the Republican Party, because every time you leave the Republican Party, every time one of you abandons the party, that's one fewer voice, that's one fewer voter that Ted Cruz can point to and say, hey, look, these are the people that I have backing me up, right? A Republican candidate is not going to point to the Libertarian Party, the Federalist Party. He's not going to point to these other parties and say, oh, these people like me. Because leadership in Congress is going to look at Ted Cruz and go, hey, dude, go to the Federalist Party. He's not going to do it because he's not going to get rid of his voice, which is why he ended up coming out and, you know, kind of backdoor endorsing Donald Trump, because he realized that having a voice in Congress is more important, because he can't get anything done. He's ineffective. He will be completely neutered if he does not continue to have a voice in Congress. And sure enough, he's still out there doing good stuff. So please don't lose faith in the party. We have to keep fighting. We have to save this party from itself. It's going to take a lot of time, but if we can get rid of hundreds, if not almost 1,000 Democrats in less than 8 years, we can get rid of 1,000 rhinos in this country in less than 8 years. We can get rid of them. We can primary them out. And it might mean that we have to lose some elections to Democrats in order to do it. It might mean that. It might mean that some incumbent rhino Republicans have to lose their seat to a Democrat in order for us to rally next time to replace them with a constitutionalist. Oh, so-and-so Mitch McConnell got outed or whatever, and so now we have this mandate to come in and defeat the Democrat that beat him with somebody who actually will keep his word, somebody who's honest or whatever. Just an example off the top of my head. So thank you for bearing with me show number 63. I'm a little rusty, I'm a little out of practice. Obviously, I've kind of been on these crazy rants. I've been all over the place today, so I apologize for that. But thank you for bearing with me. Thank you for coming back. I'm glad to be back. I'm going to continue with the show, like I said. Next show number 64, I promise, will be more polished than this one was. This one was kind of rough. I understand. I apologize. But it'll be, you know, a little bit clearer going forward. We have a lot of good stuff to look forward to. There's constantly stuff in the news, so keep your head on straight. And don't forget, folks, stay right. Hey there, Stay Right fans. I'm back from my political vacation. Now that I'm back, I'm going to be updating a lot of the content for the Stay Right members section. So please go to stayright.weebly.com. That's stayright.weebly.com and sign up for the newsletter. I get new subscriptions every single day. Also, if you want to go over to the Facebook group, we are Stay Right NCC on Facebook, and feel free to join up. I'm going to have a lot of new content in the members only section on the stayright.weebly.com website. And I will be kicking out a new password soon, but I have been on a little political vacation, so I haven't had a chance to do that yet. But go ahead, check me out, subscribe. Be sure to comment. Be sure to give me your input. Stayright.weebly.com. Don't forget, folks, stay right.